So we're going to take our Bibles and we're going to start in Psalm 46. And being this is the start of school, the younger kids, I don't know if they do it beyond kindergarten, first grade, but they have a thing called show and tell. I'm sure we've all been in there. You bring something, you show, and you tell about it. Well, today I'd like to share on, it's a stretch, but show and help instead of show and tell. And that is that God will show us, like when we have a need, he will show us what to do. And then he not only shows us what to do, but he will help us in seeing that come to pass if we seek his help. Because in living life, there's lots of things that come up in our lives, day by day, sometimes hour by hour, and hopefully not minute by minute, but they could. But things come up where we don't know what to do, but we know we need to do something, but we don't know what it is. And God is an expert at helping people with solutions, an expert at getting things to where they should be for the individual. And that is so wonderful to know. And we do believe in God, and we love God, and we do seek him. And it's nice to know that he is willing and able to help us. And in Psalm 46, verse 1, it says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. He's right there. Therefore, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Selah. I've never been in a storm or big enough where the mountains are removed. You live in Vermont, and, you know, there's a big storm, and you look out your window and that ski lodge and ski mountain that used to be there is gone. I mean, that's pretty wild. Now, there are mudslides and stuff like that, you know, things that we see on from California in certain areas of the world. But, you know, the essence is the whole world could be falling apart. God can help us. Therefore, we are not going to fear. While we're in a neighborhood, let's go to Psalm 107. Psalm 107, just a great psalm showing how God helps people, wants to help people. And we're just going to read a couple of responses here. This is one of them. Verse 23. And it gives different scenarios. This is one of the scenarios. And they that go down to the sea in ships, these are fishermen and all that kind of stuff, that do business in great waters, they see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. For he commandeth and raises the stormy wind, which lifteth up the waves thereof. They mount up to see heaven. They go down again to the depths. Their soul is melted because of trouble. They reel to and fro and stagger like a drunken man and are at their wits' end. Which means they don't know what else to do. They've tried all their ideas, maybe thought up all their ideas. They came to a point, I don't have another idea. I don't know what else to try. I don't know what else to do. They were at their wits' end. Then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, and he bringeth them out of their distresses. He maketh the storm a calm, so that the waves thereof are still. Doesn't say how he did it, but that he did it. Verse 6. Same thing. There was a scenario. Verse 6. Then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them out of their distresses. Verse 13. Another scenario. Then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he saved them out of their distresses. Verse 19. Another scenario. Then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, and he saveth them out of their distresses. See any pattern? Just really wonderful. And verse 20, just as a side note, one of those great verses we love to think about. He sent his word and healed them and delivered them from their destruction. It's the word of God that does all this. And there are several ways that we can get answers from God. A primary is from the written word, what does he tell us to do or not do? But then there's revelation, you know, word of knowledge, word of wisdom, or discerning spirits, other manifestations. There's angels, there's just crying out for help and he does something. He changes the weather or whatever. There's a lot of ways that God works, but the idea is we seek him. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 3. One of the ways that we can help, God can help us, is he can give us wisdom as to what to do. It's very evident in our country today with the pandemic of what to do with all this, these problems, especially now that the kids are going back to school. The schools have a lot of dilemmas as to how to deal with it. A lot of the cities have dilemmas as to how to deal with city life. And if God's wisdom was sought, there may be a lot less frustration and confusion. And this is a great example of someone who utilized God's wisdom. Chapter 3, it was a request. God said to Solomon, King Solomon, who was David's son, he took over the kingdom. And God said, hey, what do you want from me? And verse 5, or verse 6, it says, there's this Solomon's answer. Solomon's a new king. Solomon said, thou hast shown unto thy servant David, my father, great mercies, according to as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son, that's me, to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David thy father, and I am but a little child. Now that's a figure of speech. He was a man. He was literally a man. I am a little child. I know not how to go out or come in, which basically means I don't know how to do what I'm supposed to do as a king. I don't know how to king. I don't know how to make decisions. I don't know how to serve in this capacity. And this verse 8, and thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. It's a lot of people. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people? And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And so he said, because you asked this and not for riches and all the good stuff for me, I'm going to give you a wise heart. And he gave him great, great wisdom. And we're going to see one of the first acts, if not the first act, of this wisdom. In the same chapter, verse 16, a scenario comes up, which marks that this man Solomon had wisdom that was beyond his years, so to speak, and his experience as a king. It says, then came there two women that were harlots unto the king and stood before him. And the one woman said, O my lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after I was delivered that this woman was delivered also. Must have been a maternity ward. Two women live in a house, and they both have babies the same week. I was delivered that this woman also. And we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. And this woman's child died in the night because she overlaid it. What happened is she was sleeping with it, was nursing it, and fell asleep on it and suffocated. And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me while thine handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom. And when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. Can you imagine that woman waking up, going to feed her baby, and it's a dead baby? I mean, it's gross. But when I considered it in the morning, behold, it wasn't even my son that I did bear. Started noticing, this isn't even my kid. And the other woman said, oh, no, 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 no. The living's my son and the dead's your son. And this said, no, but the dead is thy son and the living is my son. Thus they spoke before the king. Then said the king, the one saith, let me just get this straight. One of you is saying, this is my son that liveth, and this, thy son is the dead. And the other says, nay, but thy son is the dead, and my son is the living. So what does Solomon do? He's got a dilemma. He's got to figure out how he's going to do this. He could go through a lot of different ways, and maybe each one could work. I don't know. But he asked God what to do. And here's what was the solution. Verse 24, and the king said, bring me a sword. And they brought the sword before the king. And the king said, divide the living child in two and give half to the one and half to the other. Everybody's happy. Each get 50%. Then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, oh, my Lord, give her the living child and in no wise slay it. But the other said, let it be neither thine, mine nor thine, but divide it. Okay. Then the king answered and said, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, and they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. So Solomon was given wisdom as to what to do. Now, it may seem like a silly little thing. Well, let's just pretend we're going to kill it. But what happened? He got the answer very clearly in that everybody involved knew, okay, this is the right woman, the right mom. There was no dispute afterwards. Well, she said she was, she really wasn't. It wasn't all the newspaper stuff. You know, it really didn't come to everybody knew, okay, he found out who the real mom was. That's true wisdom. Let's go to 2 Kings chapter 4. I don't know how far we'll get, but I just thought we'd look at a number of records in a row from 2 Kings with the involvement of a man of God named Elijah, whom we're aware of and have read these records, I'm sure, many times. But Elijah was a man who loved God. He walked for God. He was a normal person just like all of us in that he ate food, he put on clothes, he took off clothes, he went to sleep at night, he got up in the morning, he had circumstances to deal with. But he was called of God and he loved God and he wanted to serve God and he was a prophet, he wanted to serve God's people, but he was a person just like you and me. His hair got old, gray. If he had hair, as he got older, it got gray. So let's put it that way. Somewhere. He either lost it or it turned gray. If he got old, you know, he was a human being. And let's just look at some of the circumstances he was involved in. Now, this wasn't all in one day, obviously, but these are things that he did to help people and how God worked in the circumstances for a solution. And they're just incredible. Some of them are simple. Some of them are pretty big. So we're just going to read for a while. Chapter 4, verse 1 says, and as best as possible, put yourself in the scenario either of him or the person he's working with, and like as if you're that person. And what would you do? Would you do what was done? Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elijah. Thy servant, my husband, is dead. And thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord. You know, he was one of your helpers. He loved God. He's now dead. I'm his wife. And here's what has happened. It was a major shift in finances, maybe, because the husband's not there anymore to take care of her. And she started accruing a debt. First time she needed to pay for something, she started getting money. Hey, can you lend me this? Can you lend me that? And now it got to a point where we read it. And the creditor has come. It was American Express. No, they didn't have America back then. I think it was called Israeli Express.
There you go.
Creditor has come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen. So he's taking my kids for collateral for the money. Of course, in our day and time, they couldn't do that. They can't even take your house. But all they do is send you to a bankruptcy court. But can you imagine being that woman? Her husband dies. She's trying to make things go. She's getting into debt. She's deeper in debt. Finally, the creditor says, I want your two sons. And when you get the money, you get your two sons back. Or they're going to work off this credit, you know. Elijah said to her, what do you want me to do for you? Tell me, what hast thou in the house? What's that got to do with the creditor? And she said, well, my handmaid had not anything in the house save a pot of oil. Then he said, go, borrow the vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels, borrow not a few. So the only thing she's really got left in the house that's got any value is a pot of oil. So you know what God's going to do as an answer to this problem? He's going to work with what she has. She had a pot of oil. God's creator of heaven and earth. I guess he could work with a pot of oil. Or let's say she had a couple pounds of silver or gold. Could he work with the silver and gold? Could he work with a pot of oil? What if she, I don't know. That's the only thing she had of value. So, you know, go borrow as many empty vessels as possible. She could say, you know, this is sounding silly. I asked you, what could I do to get out of debt? And you're telling me to go borrow a couple empty vessels, as many as I can get. But, you know, she did it. And when thou art come in, verse 4, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and shalt pour out into all those vessels. And thou shalt set aside that which is full. So my linear brain, Susan says I got a linear brain, which is like, you know, calculate, you know. Some people have it and some people don't. I guess I got a linear brain. She's told me enough times, I believe it. But Henry was taken, he was in our bedroom pretty early, him and Hunter, and we have seashells in these big glasses. And Henry is taking seashells out, they like to do it, and he put them all in a line. There was nine of them, they counted one, all not real straight. That's a linear brain. An artistic brain would have it all over the place, you know, but linear, just. So the linear brain would say, I've got one pot of oil, can't be that big, how big could it be? And he wants me to go all around my neighbors and get every empty vessel and pour out the oil. So like, what good is that going to do? I'm going to put one drop in that one. But as stupid as it sounds, she did it. So she went, verse 5, from him and shut the door upon her and upon his sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. And it came to pass, when the vessels were full, that she said unto her son, bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, there is not a vessel more. And the oil stayed. Another translation for the word stayed is stopped pouring. So she had a vessel with oil in it. And the first vessel that's empty that she tries it, she pours. It's kind of weird. She's pouring out of her vessel and she's filling up this, but the other one's not emptying. And then she gets another one. Can you imagine being that person? You're just like pouring and it's filling up. And you're looking at the thing and, okay, give me another one. And pouring up. And everyone that they could fill or get, they fill. When they had no more, she didn't have anything. So the thing stopped, the magic pot stopped pouring. God was done. She got all that she could get. God did what he did, and now she's got a bunch of vessels with oil on them. You got to say, holy smoke, look at this thing. I can't believe it. It's filling up. And it came to pass, they were full, that she said unto her son, bring me yet, okay, verse 7. And then she came and told the man of God, and he said, gosh, imagine that. So here's where wisdom again comes in. God had to show him something. He showed him so far. Go tell the lady to get as many vessels as he can and pour the oil on them. Now he says, go sell the oil and pay thy debt and live thou and thy children on the rest. Imagine that. Here's a woman who's destitute, really. I would say if somebody's coming to get your only two sons and take them away, isn't that a spot of being destitute? Your husband's dead. you got no money, now they're taking two people that will be taking care of you away. That's a pretty destitute spot. And his thing was, just go get some empty pots. God worked with what she had. If she had bubble gum, he'd say, go get a bunch of wrappers. You know what I mean? Whatever it is. Doesn't really matter to God. That's what she happened to have. If she had nothing, God would have a solution. Verse 8. And it fell on a day, it's a different scenario. And it fell on a day that Elijah passed to Shunem, where there was a great woman. And she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as often as he passed by, he turned thither to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, behold, now I perceive that this is a holy man of God, which passes by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, in the wall, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick, and it shall be when he cometh to us that he shall turn in hither. And I want to bless this guy. He's traveling by a lot. I perceive he's a holy man of God. Let's make a little room for him. Verse 11, and it fell on the day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, say now unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us and for this care. What is to be done for thee? You know, he wanted to bless her. Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? You want me to speak to some political person, maybe get you a little favor or something? You need something? And her answer was, and she answered, I dwell among my own people. I'm good. I'm satisfied. And he said unto her, well, what then can be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old. You know, she's got no kids. And her husband, you know, her husband's old, and she doesn't have any children. So, it's not God forcing this woman to get pregnant. It was apparently a desire in her heart, and Elijah probably asked God, what can I do? And God said, just tell her she's getting pregnant. That's what he does. And he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. Even knew the gender. That was before we were confused enough to not know what gender a person is. God now has to, like, hey, it's number 50. No, it was 52. No, it's number 55 now. Oh, they just upped it to 60. It's number 60. A son. And she said, nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine husband. I mean handmaid. And a woman conceived and bare a son at the season that Elijah had said unto her according to the time of life. And when the child was grown, it fell on a day that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said to his father, my head, my head. And he said to a lad, carry him to his mother. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. Now imagine the mom. You know, she hadn't had any children. She didn't ask for a kid. The man of God wanted to bless her. God slipped it to him that she'd love to have a kid. And God did whatever to make that thing happen. And now the kid's dead in her arms, on her lap. That's a destitute spot to be in. It's a bad spot to be in. And what does God do? Verse 21, well, she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. So she's taken some action. And she called unto her husband and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. And he said, wherefore wilt thou go to him today? Is it neither new moon nor Sabbath? And he said, it is well. And she saddled an ass and said to her servant, drive and go forward. Slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee. So she went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass, when the man of God saw her afar off, that he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Behold yonder that Shunammite. Run now, I pray thee, to meet her, and say unto her, Is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with thy child?" And she answered, "It is well." I can't believe the memory that she did not have. Her son just died, right? And she's saying he's well. No, she is just fixed on going to see that man of God, and she's wanting something to happen. She's wanting deliverance. And when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet, but Gehazi came near to thrust her away. You know, he just, can you imagine, the man of God's there, she just grabs his feet, and she's in a total distress, and the helper's, get off that guy. You know, it's not a pleasant scenario. It's not a pleasant scene. The man of God, in the middle of verse 27, and the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid it from me and hath not told me." So it was obvious to Elijah, she was really upset, understandably so. And he also knew that God hadn't shown him what was going on. He just knew something was wrong, but God had hid it. What a relationship Elijah had with God, you know, where God slipped him information. I remember seeing a thing, nothing to do with this, but it's just goofy in how linear my mind thinks. I saw this thing years ago. It was about the Beatles, some documentary. And when the Beatles, when they were first popular, they went to India, and they were looking for answers to life. And they started seeking Indian religion stuff. And the Maharishi, or whatever he was called, they met with him, and the guy's trying to win these four guys over into that stuff. And so they went for, he was going to go on a helicopter ride, and he wanted to bring one of them with him, but only one. There was only room for one other. So John Lennon said, "Hey, I'm going. And he went up with him. And later they asked him, "Why'd you go?" And he goes, "I figured it was just the two of us. He'd slip it to me what the real thing is about life." But he didn't. And I always thought, yeah, he's going to slip it to you. And God hadn't slipped to Elijah yet what's going on. But he will. He'd slip it to him in due time. So he said, "It's hit. I don't know what's wrong. I just know her heart is vexed." Verse 28. Then she said, "Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, 'Do not deceive me'?" Then he said to Gehazi, "Gird up thy loins and take my staff in thine hand and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute her not. Salute him not, and if any salute thee, answer him not again, and lay my staff upon the face of the child." And the mother of the child said, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." She's a tenacious woman. A tenacious woman. And he arose and followed her. It's possible that Elijah was a little chubby or something. Because he's always sending Gehazi, "You go run out there first and check things out." I'm going back with the lady. He passed on before him, laid the staff on the face of the child. Oh, I'll read verse 30 again. And the mother of the child said, "As the Lord thy soul liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." And he rose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff upon the face of the child. But there was neither voice nor hearing. Now, at this point, it doesn't say that the child was dead. We don't know if Elijah knew the child was dead or Gehazi knew the child was dead. He just knew there was some major problem here. Wherefore, he went again to meet him and told him, saying, "The child is not awaked." And when Elijah was come into the house, behold, the child's dead. He may not have known that until he got into that house. But now he knows it. The child is dead and lay upon his bed, his own bed. And he went in, therefore, and what would you do? Not a pleasant scenario. He went in, therefore, and shut the door upon them two and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and lay upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands and stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. So God showed him that's what you do. Just get on the bed with him. Because that, you know, you're at a point where, okay, God, what do I do? And God showed him, lay on the bed with him. And so he did. He got face to face with him, laid there apparently a while. The kid's body, he transferred enough body heat. His body was warm, but he wasn't alive. He was just warm. Warm from Elijah's body. You know, when we lay in bed at night, you get up in the morning, if you touch the bed where you were laying, the bed's warm, right? The bed's not producing heat. That body wasn't producing heat. It was reflecting heat that was put into it from Elijah. Verse 35, then he returned and walked in the house. This is Elijah. And walked to and fro. He's just walking around and walking around, asking God what to do. So he walked to and fro, and then he goes back up and stretched himself upon him, and the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. But look at Elijah. He's just asking God, okay, what do I do? What do I do? If God said, and then God apparently said, get back on him and stretch on him. I did that already. What else you got? He just did it. He just did it. And he called Gehazi and said, call this Shunammite. So he called her, and when she was come unto him, he said, take up thy son. Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. Amazing. Verse 38, here's a different scenario. And Elijah came unto Gilgal, came again unto Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land. You know, there was not a good farming season. A lot of dry land, a lot of dry earth, and that takes a while. And you could say, well, why would God allow that to happen? I don't know, but he was living in it. There he was, still living himself, and they needed food. And the sons of the prophet were sitting before him, and he said unto his servant, set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. We got to eat. We're going to eat something. So he sends them out.
Yeah.
One went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine and gathered thereof wild gourds, his lap full, and came and shred them unto the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. So they poured out for the men to eat, and it came to pass, you know, they're happily cooking and this and that, and they finally pour it out, and they go to eat it, and they cried out and said, oh, thou man of God, there is death in the pot. And they could not eat thereof. But he said, so there was something poisonous in there. It probably came from the gourd and things that were they were unfamiliar with. But he said, then bring meal. Like that's really going to change anything. You know, something poisonous in the pot. Well, let's bring a little more salt and pepper. You know, here's the scenario. If you were the one cooking, you're responsible for all these people staying alive. And they say, there's something poisonous in this food. The natural reaction would be, all right, let's get something else. Right? Throw it out. But there was a dearth in the land. It wasn't like you can just go get some more food. So God told Elijah, throw some meal in there. And what that did to the pot, I don't know what chemically happened, but it says he cast it into the pot and he said, pour out for the people that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot. Who'd like to be the first one to try it? Me. You know, just amazing, you know. It's like that sailor, those sailors on that boat, they were tossed to and fro. The waves went way up and then way down and way up. And they asked God for help and he calmed the seas. Here, they've got death in the pot. It's a poisonous food. What do we do? They just kept seeking God. And lastly, we're just going to read this last couple of verses. Another scenario. And there came a man from Baal Shalisha and brought the man of God bread of the first fruits. So he was, you know, bringing first fruits, bringing them to a man of God and to the people helping him. 20 loaves of barley and full ears of corn in the husera. And he said, so Elijah's excited about that, I guess. And he goes, hey, give unto the people that they may eat. And his servitor said, what? Should I set this before 100 men? This isn't going to feed 100 men. And he said, again, give the people that they may eat. For thus saith the Lord, they shall eat and shall leave thereof. Just give it to them. They're going to eat and there's going to be leftovers. Trust me. Just go ahead and give it to them. So he set it before them, and they did eat and left thereof according to the word of the Lord. Isn't that something? It's almost like Jesus with the fish and the loaves. And he tells the apostles, you know, set it out there. What are you, you know, we're going to feed everybody with this stuff? You know, but Jesus Christ read that one day. And maybe when he was reading it, God said, you know, you could do that. Or you will do that. Who knows? But there it is in the Word of God. It's really amazing. But look what he must have done. He must have said, God, what do I do? And God said, stick it out there in front of them. They'll eat it and they'll even be leftovers. And Elijah didn't argue. Great, great attribute of going to God. First, going to God. But then not arguing whatever he tells you to do. It may seem stupid to a linear brain, but... And lastly, one other verse we're going to go to is 2 Chronicles chapter 16, just a couple chapters up on your right. This is the opposite side. This is what we don't want to do. We want to seek God. We don't want to argue with his answers. We don't want to argue with his wisdom. We don't want to argue with how he says to do it. We want to go to God. Chapter 16 of 2 Chronicles. Asa, it's about a king named Asa. He was a believer, did great things with God's word when he was younger, but somewhere along the line he started slipping into the things of the world. And he did some things that weren't right. And verse 7, we're going to pick it up. It says, and at that time, Hanani, the seer, as a prophet, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said unto him, because thou hast relied on the king of Syria, and not relied on the Lord thy God, therefore is the host of the king of Syria escaped out of thine hand. Were not the Ethiopians and the Lubans a huge host, with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because thou didst rely on the Lord, he delivered them into thine hand. That's something that happened much earlier. Big deliverance for Judah and Israel, and Asa had led it. And he's reminding them, you know, at one time you did rely on God, Lord. Verse 9, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. Herein thou hast done foolishly. Therefore, from henceforth thou shalt have wars. Then Asa was wroth with the seer and put him in prison. I'll deal with you. I'll just throw you in prison. You know, instead of repenting or instead of saying, oh, gosh, you know, you're right about that. He just stuck him in prison. That's not a good spot to be in your heart. For he was in a rage with him because of this thing. And Asa oppressed some of the people at the same time. Behold, the acts of Asa, first and last, lo, they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. And Asa, in the 39th year of his reign, was diseased in his foot, or his feet, until his disease was exceeding great. Yet, in his disease, he sought not to the Lord, but to the physicians. He just stopped looking to God and looking to God for answers. He stopped doing that, and his life started getting messed up. Then he got a disease in his foot, kept getting worse and worse, and he just never went to God. Nothing wrong with going to a physician. God might say, hey, go to a physician. I don't know. But he didn't seek God. And look at the difference between Elijah. He just kept seeking God, and people kept seeking, going to him for help. And he kept going to God for the solutions, and they would actually carry it out. Here, a king had a prophet trying to help him, and he rejected it. So we don't want to be this part of the teaching. We want to have a heart that just is meek to God, meek to his word, meek to somebody speaking it to us, and not fighting it with our five senses. Because sometimes our five senses does get in the way. And we've seen so many things that God has done for our lives. And it doesn't always line up necessarily five senses wise. It just doesn't. Doesn't make sense to us that God create the heavens and earth just like that. Or put it back together by just saying it. Okay, let there be light. Yeah, just gonna speak it into being. it doesn't compute with our type of brain. But he did it. Nonetheless, God told Elijah, throw that meal in that pot and it won't kill anybody. Yeah. They were brave enough to try it. Somebody was believing. And trusting. You know what I mean? I say, I've gone all this time without eating. I can wait a couple more hours to see what Denise does. Ladies first. Maybe that's where it came from. Ladies first. I am being a gentleman today. But, look what happened. God's deliverance was there. Do we have anything that comes up? You might even have something that's going on in your own life now. You might even have two, holy smokes, or three at the same time. Or 50, I don't know. If we go to God, he will deliver. If we say, my feet are fine, God, I'll deal with it myself. Okay. Eventually God stops sending a seer around. Israel got to that point. Where God said, the Syrians are coming, they're going to take you away, and I'm just going to watch. But I'm going to give you hope. 70 years later, those kids of your kids are coming back. That's what I told them. So, but God's a merciful God. So we got things that come up, and some of them are a little harder than others, but we just keep seeking God Almighty. And all of us, except for these fellas, and Aaron have been taught what God's word says concerning word of knowledge, word of wisdom, discerning spirits, gifts of healing, miracles. You know what I mean? We know what the word says. And all we have to do is say the words, God, what do I do? I mean, it's if we can receive revelation, anybody can receive revelation. You know what I mean? It doesn't take a college degree. You have to know about that much of God's word at the most.